Hello and welcome to the Corner 3, Baseline 2 today. My name is Bobby Corella. Joining me to talk Mavs on and off the floor, but mostly on the floor today. It is going to be a big basketball ep today. The great Isaac Harris.
We won a game!
It's over! The losing streak is over! We did it! We did it!
It's a big day.
It's a huge day.
I'm so excited. And the Heat, I mean, we've talked about the Heat being a rivalry. I mean, are they a rivalry?
I think so. It's been pretty back and forth for a few years now.
Yeah, so, I mean, we kind of avenged the finals in 2006.
Big time.
Last night. I do want to give a shout out at the very beginning to my guy, Sully. Sully is a ninth grader here in the DFW area in Coppell. And Sully is a huge Mavs fan, never misses a Mavs game. And he's almost blind. And I say that because his fandom for the Mavs of watching every game and listening to Mark Folliwell and listening to the Corner 3. I got to meet with him this past week and talk about podcasting and media and everything. And Sully, thanks for listening. And thanks for being a diehard Mavs fan. You are the example of what a diehard Mavs fan is.
Hey, shout out to Sully. That's a powerful name in the Mavs universe, too, of course. Going back many decades, there have been a couple different Sullys that have worked here. So it's a strong name.
I think of Monsters, Inc.
Oh, okay. I was thinking of like Kevin Sullivan and Terry Sullivan.
But all right. A little different memories.
Yeah. So the Mavs win 114-108. Luka Doncic, another 30-point triple-double. That is number five in a row. Now four triple-doubles in a row with at least 35 points. That is an NBA record. That's pretty cool. That's a pretty esoteric record, but you know what? I'll take it. Kyrie Irving, 23 points. Mavs also had one, two, three, four other guys in double figures. Now, we're going to talk about one of the most important players in that game here shortly. But overall, Isaac, just how are you feeling? Obviously, it's good to get off the schneid, right? It's good to beat a good team. The Heat are good. They're a little banged up, but they're good, especially after the nature of some of these recent losses. Like, is this good? Are you feeling like an exhale? Are you feeling rejuvenated? Are you feeling like cautious optimism? Where are you at on the spectrum right now?
Yeah, I feel a little bit more optimism because, you know, it's not like, hey, they pulled this game off. They beat the Heat. Heat have been rolling of late. I think they've won 11 of their past 14 before last night and playing really good basketball. But it didn't take like a Luka 60-point game or Luka and Kyrie combining for, you know, 100 points or something.
They combined for less than they average this season, by the way.
Yeah, so, like, I think they won this game with their defense, and that's what gives me optimism. Like, you look at that first quarter, the Heat scored 36 points in the first quarter, and then the next three quarters after that, they scored 25 or less. And so it just felt like the Mavericks kind of turned the page, just 22 points in the second quarter for, you know, the Heat. And it just felt like they kind of turned the page in the game defensively. We'll see if that carries on. They obviously have Detroit next, but that's the biggest thing for them right now is that we know they can score. Can they defend anybody? Like, that's the – and so – and last night they defended.
There were some fortunate misses for sure. There were some defensive breakdowns still throughout the game, especially, you know, the Heat in the first quarter. They had poured it on. You know, but in quarters two and three, they cooled off a little bit. But still, the Heat for the game shot 44.7% from three. You're not going to win many games when the opponent shoots that well on 38 attempts. However, the Mavs did because in the fourth quarter, their defense took a step up. They came up with some really, really, really big stops in crunch time. And that's like the, you know, this is going to be a pretty existential episode, okay? We're taking many, many steps back. And this is like a bird's eye view thing that we're about to dive into here shortly. But, you know, this game was, I feel like, a perfect encapsulation of like all of the best and most frustrating aspects of this team, right? The best being, hey, in the final 5 minutes, the Mavs were clearly the better team. They out-executed the Heat, felt like they out-schemed the Heat in some respects. And yet, through the first 36 minutes, it was like, some of these possessions, you're like, what the heck is going on? It's like, I know what you're capable of.
Yeah.
You know, I know what this team can be on both ends of the floor. And yet, sometimes just like, just why can't I see that just a little more often?
Yeah.
You know? So it was like, I just feel like it was a microcosm of the whole season, kind of.
Yeah, and it's like, hey, which role players are going to step up in the game? They had a couple different, you know, players step up in this game, but six players in double digits for almost said fidgets. fidget
spinners. Would have been funny.
Fidget spinners. They had six players in double figures, you know, for, you know, the Mavericks last night, and that's big for this team, that it doesn't, you know, one of the things is like, hey, can you find scoring? We know how much Tim's been struggling as of late, and it's like, can you find scoring outside of the duo? And last night, you know, you had four other guys that scored in double figures, and so that's, yeah, I think they did a lot of things well last night. There's obviously some things they can still get better at, but you beat the Heat, which is one of the hottest teams in the league right now. So hopefully you can build off that, build some momentum, go into this Detroit game, we know Detroit's struggling this season, try to take care of business and get a little momentum under your belt.
Real quickly before we move on, dude, Terry Rozier was so good last night. That was such a good move for them. And they played that game without Tyler Hero too. So, I mean, that's one major dynamic element of their team that was missing. But Duncan Robinson filled in. He had a bunch of big shots. Heat are... they're just as good as they always are.
Yeah, the upgrade from Lowry to Rozier, big move for them.
You know, I know you're a big Scary Terry guy. I am too. I've always been a big Scary Terry guy.
I didn't know how much
guy.
I could go into that right now. Okay. But, you know, I think they signed Patty Mills the other day. Yep. So we'll see if, you know, he plays very much. And I really liked Jaquez coming into the draft.
Oh, yeah, you're like the president of the fan club.
No. I'm not that. He was just a guy later in the draft that I really liked. And I didn't think he's going to be this good already. Mm-hmm. I didn't think he's going to be in a dunk contest. But
I found myself kind of excited whenever he subbed out at the end of the game.
Yeah.
Like, all right. Whew.
He's just such a good all-around player, and it's frustrating that the Heat have him.
Yeah. All right, so as fun as it is to talk about the other teams, and hey, you got to give credit where it's due. The Heat are a really good team, and the Mavs have faced – plenty of other really good teams lately, and unfortunately, they've been bettered on most of those nights. Our job here in Studio 41 presented by Chime on the Corner 3 is to talk all things Mavs. And now, we usually have a day before the show, like pre-pro meeting, where we really very seriously approach the following day's show, and I mean, we're scripting it like
big
down
production
to the
meeting.
Second. Oh, yeah. It's huge. It's really big stuff. Now, we did not have the opportunity to do that yesterday for a couple reasons. Namely, it was a very early tip-off, and Isaac, you have a job. So there was some other stuff going on. But with this being the day after a game, we knew, okay, that the way the game goes is going to kind of determine the things we talk about. Oop, as I hit the microphone. But we couldn't really wait for the result of this Mavs Heat game to dive into some of this stuff. I texted you whenever you said that we couldn't have a meeting. Austin will be back with us, I believe, next week, right?
I think so.
I texted you saying, man, I don't really know what to talk about right now because it's pretty rough. The Mavs had lost 5 out of 6, I believe, going into the game last night. Yeah. And I remember asking you, how existential do you want to get? And you just said, I got 10 questions. I'll send them your way shortly. And I was like, that just sounds perfect. So I just want to hand you the baton.
Let's go. All right. Yeah. So 10 questions. Some of them will obviously be faster answers than the other. But let's just start off by, when you lose this many games in a row, or the streak prior to the Miami game, one of the hottest conversations among fans is coaching. And I think for me, like, how do you – and so this is my first question. How do you know what is coaching and what is not? Because, can we even answer that?
The ultimate answer is we cannot answer that. Because the only people that know are in the locker room.
Yeah.
And no matter how many media people hold their feet to the fire, like, they're just not going to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to. In 5 or 10 years, someone will talk about it. You know. But in the meantime, you know, let me preface all of this by saying I understand when things go poorly, like, it's somebody's fault.
Yeah.
Like, it's you know. But the thesis of this statement is that, like, when an organization struggles, it's really everybody's fault. So
that's such a great answer.
It is, though, man. Like, hey, if we have a bad show in the studio, sometimes I'm more responsible than everybody else. But, like, sometimes there's going to be a technical issue or whatever. Like, it's, you know, we all have to share blame. So, okay. The way that I determine it, though, like the way that I personally go about figuring out, hey, what the heck is going on? What's the biggest root of this problem is by leaning on my own like values and experience. I've seen a lot of basketball. I've seen a lot of basketball, dude. Specifically a lot of Mavs basketball. I haven't missed a Mavs game in like almost 20 years. Many games I watch multiple times.
Some people, Sully's not even.
Yeah. Some people weren't even alive the last time I missed a Mavs game. You know, I've watched enough basketball for several lifetimes. Now, most coaches have forgotten more than I'll ever know, so it's not like I'm some basketball genius, but I've watched a lot of the Mavs, okay? So I kind of have a pretty good idea of the player's strengths and weaknesses, of the way that they want to run their defense or their offense or whatever. So, okay, so I kind of have an experience, an eye for this sort of thing. And, you know, that is only enhanced by the way that I watch games at the arena. So, you know, whenever you watch a game on TV, the broadcast angle is kind of overhead, but it's generally a little flatter. So you don't really get as good of an idea of like the spatial relationship between a lot of the players on the floor. But in the press box, and you can back this up, you see everything.
Yeah.
Like, we're almost on top of the court. So it's a little far away. Sometimes you don't see expressions on guys' faces, but you can definitely see plays as they develop. And you can kind of get an understanding of like, okay, this is what the other team is trying to do. Another thing that I do is I don't really watch the ball very often. I watch what else is happening.
Yeah.
And there's so many things in a game that are going to happen away from the ball where if you're not paying attention, you're going to be really confused whenever something happens, right? And then the ultimate cheat code for knowing if a guy made a mistake or not is by looking at the bench. Because Sean Sweeney or Jared Dudley, you know, Sweeney's
pretty expressive. He'll put his head down in his hands.
He'll drop a clipboard. Yeah. You know. Jared Dudley's a little more kind of subtle about it. He'll kind of do like one of these, or like sometimes Kidd will like be sitting down and he'll just like, just kind of very, he's not going to like hang his head, but just sort of like, oh boy, you know, when coaches react like that, it's definitely not their fault.
Yeah.
You know, now that isn't to say that what the Mavs do on defense is always like perfect by design. There are things they do on defense that I don't really agree with. The way that they defend middle pick and rolls, they play a lot of drop. The way they defend handoffs, they typically are essentially taught to like trail the guy getting the ball. Whenever guys cut, they generally turn their back to the ball to look at their man, which is good until you can't see the ball coming to you. Also, sometimes whenever the ball is on like in one corner, guy defending the weak side corner will totally turn around away from his guy to see the ball, which is good because you want to see the ball, but it's bad because your guy can relocate. There were a couple examples of that in the Heat game last night, you know, that you can go back and look at. So, like, there are some things that they do where I feel like, I don't know, man. I don't really agree with that. But also you have to understand, like, the limitations of their own players. The Mavs' defensive system is built around trying to hide Luka and Kyrie and sometimes Tim. And that's not to, like, overly criticize Luka and Kyrie. J. Kidd even admits it.
Or Tim.
But generally, Tim is going to be on the floor with Luka or Kyrie, which means Tim is asked to defend players that normally on most teams he probably wouldn't be defending.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, J. Kidd has said, hey, one guy usually plays a zone and the other guys have to rotate around him. Like, he's talking about Luka and Kyrie whenever he says that sort of thing. So, like, you know, a coach's job is to put the players in position to be successful. This is putting Luka and Kyrie in a position to be successful because you're not exposing them against, like, Jason Tatum or having Luka switch off and guard Jimmy Butler 50 times a game, which, if the Mavs switched every time, is exactly what would happen.
Yep.
You know, so there is some sort of, like, you have to work within the rules. You have to color within the lines and all this stuff. So, like, this isn't all just they play some silly system. Like, everything they do is built around trying to maximize Luka and Kyrie's strengths while trying to minimize their weaknesses. One thing I want to say.
This is a great answer.
I'm sorry. I'm going on forever. I just got a lot to say.
I love it.
One thing that is super important whenever you're thinking about coaching, players, and everything about all this stuff. Coaches coach, players play. All right?
Ooh.
Think about it at your job. Hey, we all have bosses. Okay? Unless you're the boss. And if you are the boss, then this is especially for you. Okay? We all have bosses. Every boss is different. Some bosses are going to be real laissez-faire, real hands-off. They're going to delegate a lot of stuff. They're going to trust you. Maybe they'll even empower you with a lot of encouragement and incentives to perform your job, right? On the other end of the spectrum, some bosses are going to be looking over your shoulder. They're going to be on your butt about every single detail of whatever job you're doing. While you're filling out your TPS reports, they're going to be making sure that you don't miss any numbers, okay? There's no typos. Now, no matter what your managerial style is, no matter how, you know, on your back your boss is, like, isn't it ultimately your job to do your job? Like, whether they're annoying you 25 hours a day and 8 days a week, or whether they're like, hey, you're doing the best job ever, I don't even need to worry about you anymore. Like,
still gotta do your job.
It's still your job. You know, players still have to execute. And nobody in the world can honestly look at the last 7 games before the Heat game, and even like the first half of that Heat game is still pretty mixed bag of defense.
Yeah.
Nobody can objectively look at how the Mavs defended for the last 7.5 games and say the players are doing their best. No one can look at how Luka and Kyrie defended and say they're doing their best.
Yeah.
No one can look at how Tim is playing offense and say Tim is doing his best. Like, no one can look at anybody. No, it doesn't matter how much money you make. It doesn't matter how many or how few minutes you play. Nobody can look at those guys and objectively say, this is Jason Kidd's fault. The players are doing their best. Like, you cannot do that. The players are not executing. So you have to be able to distinguish between, like, effort, awareness, being locked in, engagement, and all that stuff. Like, and you cannot make the excuse of, if you do acknowledge that the players aren't trying their best or whatever, you can't look at the coach and say, well, the coach has to motivate them. Because go back to your boss. If your boss is an annoying kind of boss, and they say, come on, guys, you have to try harder, is that really going to motivate you to try harder? And even if it does, isn't it still your responsibility to try harder, whether or not your boss gives you that speech? Like, it is ultimately up to the players to execute. It's up to the players to try. It's up to the players to do all this stuff. Like, and especially when you fail, it's going to be the guys that play the most minutes, the guys that have the most responsibility, that are going to shoulder most of the blame. Now, I'm almost done. This is where the argument can unravel thanks to stan culture, which has completely destroyed the way we experience sports.
Detroit game's about to tip off.
I know. Cat and Chopper are already like, this pod's going to be like 3 hours long. Hey, I promise you I'm almost done.
Clip this for social.
Yeah. Stans will say, like, okay, hey, you know, objectively speaking, Luka's got to be better on defense. Well, he does so much on offense, and he plays so many minutes, he's tired, he has to carry this team so much. So, like, okay, so you're going to blame his defense on, you know, guys not being able to do enough on offense. Okay. And, like, well, J-Kid's got to motivate, and it's J-Kid's job to relate to Luka, so J-Kid has to tell him to try. Okay, so it's J-Kid's fault. All right. It unravels a step further when, well, why does Luka carry so much of the load on offense? Well, it's because they didn't sign enough good players that can be dynamic on offense, so it's the front office's fault. Oh, it's, you know, Mark Cuban was at dinner with KP in 2019, so they didn't sign Danny Green or whatever. Like, that, it's their fault. Like, okay, you can just totally, you can go all the way down the rabbit hole to make excuses for why this one thing is happening, or you can just, like, understand that, like, yeah, it doesn't matter if all of that stuff is true or not. Like, the basketball is still being played. Like, the players are still playing. They're still on the court competing 5-on-5 in a high-stakes game in the middle of a playoff push, where there's a lot of pressure and expectation to succeed. So, like, are you gonna play or not? You know. And now I'm not, like, trying to dunk on Luka or on Kyrie or on Tim or on, like, everybody on the roster is at fault. Like, congratulations if you are the kind of person that is like, yes, this is Cuban and Nico and J-Kid and Luka's and Kyrie's fault. Like, yes, you have discovered the truth. Organizational failures are the failure of everyone in the organization. You know, every player on the team has had a bad game in the last 2 weeks. Many players on the team have had several bad games in the last 2 weeks. That isn't J-Kid's fault. There are things that are J-Kid's fault, but, like, everyone is at fault. Yeah. I don't understand why this is like it's only a J-Kid thing or only a Tim Hardaway thing. I know Dwight doesn't play anymore. I'm sure that some of the losses are his fault too. But, like, dude, everyone's got to be better. That's just the nature of the beast. You know, it's the nature of the beast. Whenever you lose, everyone's got to be better. So I'm sorry that I just talked for 20 minutes. What are your thoughts?
So that's corner three. We'll be back next Friday.
Of my other answers are going to be this comprehensive. All right. Number one thing right now.
It is the number one thing. And I just think it's so key for us to understand that, like, from our seat, we don't really know. Like, you think if we want to talk about, like, a play, and you're like, well, what, why did they run that play? It's like, well, was that the play ran, or was that the decision by the player? Did the player ask the play? Did the player just call the play on their own? You don't really know. Like, there's only a few things in there that I look at. I'm like, okay, rotations.
Yeah, like literally who is on the floor.
Who is on the floor.
That is a coach's decision.
Yes, that is something you can, you know, a strategy, kind of hard, right? Because the player can kind of like change that up. Like, you could have a strategy out there and it's like, but they kind of effort hard. Like, I mean, sometimes you can read into like, all right, if the whole team, like what's going on, like stuff like that. But it's just so hard sometimes to figure out. And this isn't there's no fault, you know, for coaching or anything. It's just, it's so hard sometimes. It's the cherry picking of, we pick, you know, what's at fault. This is the reason for this thing. And then when a game.
Another good example of that, sorry, is if they bungle a switch, like two guys end up guarding the same guy, leaving a guy open. Is that the player's fault for not knowing that they were supposed to switch? Is that the player's fault for switching when they weren't supposed to? Is that the coach's fault for not communicating? Or is it the players involved responsible for not communicating? Like, we don't know. We just don't know.
Yeah. And the same goes back to the coaching thing of like, hey, if there's a strategy out there and it's actually going on, but like we might think, dude, why is that player doing that every single time? Maybe it's a coaching talent. We just don't know.
Mm.
So it's just, you know, that part, it's just so hard, I think, from our spot more than anything to figure out, hey, that was on coaching in general. It's just so hard from the fan perspective to understand what is at fault and what's not, compared to like a player's performance, or hey, they're not shooting the ball well, or they're not trying. Like, we can see these tangible things on the floor with the player versus coaching. And
what are your thoughts on how J-Kid came out? Now there's a quote question later on, so maybe this is even your answer, but whenever J-Kid was talking about how like you got to keep trusting Tim, and this isn't just about Tim, it's about any slumping player, right? Mm. Like, a coach is going to stay with their guy. Rick, I mean, fans got bothered a lot because Rick had his guys, you know, when that guy isn't playing well, hey, you got Jaden Hardy, he's playing great, why don't you make that switch? Like, what are your thoughts on things like sort of trust and commitment and those kind of like intangible things?
Well, there's also things behind the scenes that play into those, you know, decisions too, of like when you have to, you know, going back to a player, there's different relationships behind the scenes that it's like makes you maybe hold on a little bit, you know, further. But he's probably playing I think it kind of, for me, it kind of depends on what is, what's the track record? Like, what have we seen? Like, I could be wrong, but if they traded for Tim Hardaway at the deadline and they just got Tim in his spot and they were doing like what they're doing right now of like, hey, Tim's just got to, you know, keep on shooting, get out of it. I don't think it would be that way, right? Like, they've had Tim here for so long to where they know the value of Tim scoring and how Tim can, you know, get hot and hit at these threes and do his thing. That's like, all right, we're going to bank on the bigger body of play and really just bet on this being a small sample size that he'll come out of that. Now, when push comes to shove and it gets like playoff time, stuff like that, we'll see what happens with that. But I kind of understand it a little bit right now. I tend to lean more, like I would lean more that direction too, of like trusting okay, this is kind of the same vein, but like whenever a team goes on a big run to make a comeback in a big game, but it's with the bench.
Mm, that's always a tough one.
Do you trust those guys to just like ride it out? You brought us back. You brought the comeback, or do you put your starters back in?
Which a lot of coaches stay with. A lot of like the more respected coaches stay with their guys.
Yeah.
No matter what.
And that's how I typically roll too. Of like, hey, if these guys brought you back into the game, I think I would just ride it out.
Mm.
But
I think a real world example would be like, if you have a bad month at your job, does your salary deserve to get docked?
Mm.
Like, maybe there's no playing time equivalent for a career, but like, do you deserve less money because you had a bad month? Unless you're like a commission-based job, obviously you will have less money.
Yeah.
Like, there has to be some level of commitment. Now, sports is a little different than business, because in sports, you objectively win or you objectively lose. You objectively make the shot or you objectively don't. Ultimately, it's the player's job to make the shot. But I think a coach's job is to like motivate and empower his players. And maybe the way to do that is to keep playing him. But That's the coach's decision. So that ultimately is objectively the coach.
Or is it the coach's decision?
Maybe it's not. That's the thing. We don't know, dude. There's so much. Like, I can make a very compelling case that it is only J. Kidd's decision. If Tim Hardaway, you can make the case that it's not.
Yeah.
And people would believe one or the other.
And sometimes what I was alluding to earlier, I'm not saying it's this case at all, but like you look at different situations or organizations or rotations, whatever, like sometimes there's agent relationships that's playing in. Sometimes
salary,
there's salary stuff of like players making a certain amount of money. It's like, all right, well, yeah, I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying there's a lot of other factors that play into it. Question number two. What is
that was a good talk.
This is great.
That was good, right?
It was good. It was good. So
Cat's sleeping off screen. She's just taking a nap.
Cat just woke up. She's like, the Kings playing?
Hey, Kings had a big win last night, Cat. It was very annoying. Very annoying if you're a Mavs fan.
Some of these will go faster on, but this one might not be. What is the biggest problem right now prior to Miami game?
Everyone's addiction to social media is the problem. But on the court, this is an easy one for me. The biggest problem right now is also the biggest problem for the season, which is the Mavs just give up way too much early offense. And when they do, the other team is very good. So this season, approximately 30%, it's like 30.2 or 29.8 or whatever. I didn't do the exact math, but about 30% of total opponent field goal attempts against the Mavs have come with between 22 and 15 seconds left on the shot clock. So this is the first, 9 seconds of a possession? That's early offense. They don't even need to run a play. It's just coming down and scoring. That could be a fast break. That could just be a coast-to-coast. That could be quick little pick and pop, quick hitter that gets an open shot. 3 out of every 10 shots have come in that time range. And opponents have a 65 effective field goal percentage on those shots, which the best effective field goal percentage teams in the league, that's like 10, 11 points better than, you know, your top 5, top 10 effective field goal percentage teams ish, give or take, maybe about 5. That's not good enough.
Yeah.
Too many teams get too many easy shots against the Mavs. Now, a lot of that is you can point at film and say fast break, bad turnover, or like missed a layup, didn't get back or whatever. Like that stuff happens too often. It can't be 3 out of every 10. It's got to be like 2 out of every 10.
Yeah.
You know, if you can get it, if you can control the pace a little bit, then you're putting yourself in a position to succeed.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to ask this question because I feel like there's different, you know, I think some people would say coaching. I think some people would say defense. I think some people would say, hey, can anybody score outside of Luka and Kyrie?
Streakiness of role players is a big one.
Streakiness of role players. I just kind of did the bird's eye view of just defense in general. You look at post-All-Star break, 29th in the league in defensive rating. The Washington Wizards.
Oh, no!
At 122.5 and at 30th in the league post-All-Star break, we have Dallas Mavericks.
They didn't catch them last night?
They didn't. They improved their defense rating by 2 last night.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Because it was 126. Now it's at 124.5.
Oh,
your Dallas Mavericks post All-Star break.
Yeah, that's not, it's not good.
This is the number one problem right now.
Yeah.
Obviously, Bobby's answer played into this defensive thing. They got to figure out the defense, and there's no other way to really say that. That was actually my stat for the next question, because my next question was, hey, what's a stat that defines the post All-Star break Mavs the most? And it's defensive rating for me.
Yeah. The post All-Star break Mavs, a big reason why their defense is struggling so much post All-Star break is they are giving up a ton of corner threes. Mm. Against Miami last night, it was 15 midway through the fourth quarter, and I know they got at least one more, so it was at least 16 corner threes. In the 7 games since the All-Star break, opponents are taking 12.3 corner threes per game, which is near the very top of the league. And Isaac, they're shooting 47% on those corner threes.
Oof.
So that's roughly 6 made corner threes per game. That is 18 points per game. Generally, you know, those are shots you don't want to give up. You could defend great and still give up a corner three. But a lot of the ones that opponents are getting against the Mavs right now are just uncontested guys helping off for no reason or getting lost in traffic or whatever. Like, You have to cut that number down. You just have to cut that number down. Some of it is puck luck. Some of it is just guys. Ben Shepherd, I think, is like 10 of 10 from three against the Mavs or something since the All-Star break, which is like, okay, I mean, whatever. But, like, still, you got to make it a little. You got to make them work. You got to make them work.
Yeah. Next question. Let's do, speaking of the role players, leave Luka and Kyrie out of this because, yes, not role players.
Mm.
Who's the role player that you trust the most right now?
Dude.
And there's a lot of different ways you can say this, right? Not, you know, trust to hit an open shot, trust to just play efficient basketball, trust to play defense. This is the broad scope of it. Hey, the next player that I trust the most on the floor playing in like crunch time or whatever right now is.
So here's how wishy-washy I am with my trust. I'm trying to work on my trust issues, folks, off the court. But on the court, hey, Dante Exum.
Let's go. What about that game?
Dante Exum. The agenda is so strong.
Somebody was screaming at us probably listening to that first Miami segment of saying,
talk about Dante.
Yeah, this we were saving it for now.
Yeah, we did. It was a tease. In the industry is what we call a tease. Dante was so good, man. And the reason I trust him, yes, his shooting numbers are good. Yes, that is fantastic. But he is such a steady hand. He can bring the ball up the floor. He doesn't make very many turnovers. He doesn't make very many mistakes. He is generally a pretty responsible player. He takes the open shot when they're there. He rarely forces anything. But he has the three. He has a little turnaround in the lane that he hit at the very end of the game. Yeah. He's pretty good around the rim. He can go to the free throw line. He can defend multiple positions. Like, he's just pretty good at everything. And whenever Luka and Kyrie are getting double teamed, he can make those decisions. You know, he can be the connector or the scorer or the shooter. Like, he's just so good. He's so good. He's just so dang good.
Yeah, against Miami in his 17 minutes off the bench, he was a plus 16 in the game, had 13 points, hit both of his threes.
And it's on the Mavs to make sure that he stays, minutes stay under control. You know, he missed a lot of time. Because
would you say it's the coaching or front office? Or?
It's everybody. It's everybody. Yeah. But, like, he played like 30 minutes a game or whatever for a month filling in for Kyrie, and then he missed 2 months. Like, they need him healthy. They need him healthy.
He's kind of like the guard version of Maxey.
Mm-hmm.
He's just a unique player, can play with any combination of guys, but they just got to watch his minutes and keep him healthy for playoff time. We were talking before just what a unique like frame he has, because it's like, I don't even know like how to it like, because he was like, when he came in the league, he was just, you know, defensive, like kind of skinnier, you know, athletic guard that went in, you know, was a fifth overall in his draft, you know, to Utah. But now it's like he's a little bit thicker, has a little bit more muscle. He can defend, you know, some of these wings while also defending point guards. I mean, however you want to break down what Kyrie and Luka and their positions, they're playing. I mean, he's kind of playing the three right now. Exum is, you know, when he plays with these guys, he closed the game, you know, with them. It's just, he just has this unique frame, and even his shot, it's just
like Marcus Smartish, kind of just like bigger than his size.
I know. And I love, like, I don't know if quirky is the right word for it, but I love quirky players like him that find their spot, and he's found the spot right now. He's playing good basketball. I mean, he's playing really good basketball before his injury. But now it's like having him as this kind of X factor, you know, I don't know how you'd come playoff time. That would be nice.
My honorable mention, though, is your answer.
Yeah, as the other, you know, the other Aussie and Josh Green. I love a lot of the basketball he's playing. You know, the plus minus post All Star break's not gonna, you know, back me up on that.
His scoring numbers won't either.
No, but. But it's the other stuff too. I like his defense. I like, you know, his 3-point shooting post All Stars at 35%. Just went down just a tad in that, but he's just, if we're talking about players that I trust on the floor right now, I mean, you can make the case and you're like, all right, Derek Lively, PJ Washington, Josh, Dante. I think I lean a little bit towards Josh right now of just making the right plays, a little bit, you know, playmaking out there. The speed that he brings when he's, you know, I feel like we have two or three times a game now that Luka is making the full court pass, that they're getting out and running, and you know, that he's a little bit more to where Luka and Kyrie are kind of running the show, and then, you know, PJ's out there, Lively's out there. I mean, Lively will get up and run too, but Josh just brings that energizer bunny that just goes to a little bit extra notch that the other guys, and you need that.
He's one of the only guys on the team that can pretty consistently make something out of nothing. That isn't to say he doesn't make mistakes. He still turns it over a little too often, and you know, his three-point shot, I think he's right around 40% this season, but he maybe doesn't take all of the ones that he should all the time. But he can turn a rebound into a dunk in 2 seconds, and he can also take a guy off the dribble and get to the basket in the blink of an eye. And that is that is very, very valuable.
Next question. Who plays more total minutes the rest of the year? Maxi or Gafford?
Total minutes. Okay. I thought it was minutes per game.
No. Nope. Right. Total.
Okay, because my answer, my snap take is Maxi.
Right now, I'll give an update. Now, after the Miami game, Gafford is at 129 minutes post-All-Star. That's what I said, post-All-Star, right?
I don't know.
Rest of the season? All right, whatever. I was going to say post-All-Star, Maxi's played 30 more minutes, basically, than Gafford.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think Maxi will, because not only has, you know, J. Kidd shown a real preference for that five-out lineup whenever things are going bad or whenever the Mavs need points.
Yeah.
It can create spacing for Luka and Kyrie in ways that Gafford or Lively cannot. But also, Maxi can play alongside Gafford and Lively. You're never going to see a Lively-Gafford front court, I don't think. I'd be interested.
Maybe.
But I don't think we'll see that. So I would say Maxi by default for that reason. However, it's the same with Dante. You got to keep him healthy.
Yeah.
I think you want to keep his minutes under control. Now, it's interesting because Gafford did start Miami. I don't know if that's a long-term thing or if that was just like a kind of, hey, Lively, like, let's go. And I feel like Lively responded, and Lively did finish the game.
Yeah. Lively played really well.
But Maxi did too. And Maxi is – I know. I trust you, me. I hear you out there saying – he'll play 20 minutes and get 2 points and one rebound and one block and a turnover. Like, I hear you.
I love this voice.
You are valid. You are valid, okay? But, like, and you're going to say, I don't believe you. Stop propaganda, state media. There are a lot of things that he does that other guys on the team can't do that are not going to show up in the box score. And, like, putting him on the floor opens up the lane in ways that, having Lively and Gafford doesn't. And if you need points, got to spread the floor.
Yeah.
You know, and Maxi allows him to do that.
I'll go with Gafford just to, like,
get some disagreement going.
Yeah. It's hard to, like,
if
really.
If he's a starter, he might, dude.
I know. And it's hard to go against the, like, because Maxi can play against, you know, or play with the other two guys in Lively and Gafford. I think the case for Gafford in this is, yes, if he continues to hold the starting spot, and then two, if they try to keep Maxi healthy, you know, come playoff time, whether he, you know, sets out a couple of games, whether they watch his minutes more, you know, going towards the, you know, this final stretch of the season, and it's like, hey, you know, Lively's had a few injuries here and there. He banged knees last night in that game, but
which I think he's okay. There was no, like, I don't know. There was no real, like, uncertainty, so I think he'll be good.
Yeah. So I'll lean Gafford, but I think it's something worth watching. Like, if you tell me right now Maxi's playing full minutes every game, rest of the season, he's playing more than Gafford. But I think there's going to be, hey, we got to – kind of like the Dante stuff, like, they got to preserve – there's something very unique about what Maxi and Dante bring to this team that they have to preserve those guys for the playoffs.
Another – reason to think that Gafford might play more minutes is they play the Kings twice, so it's going to be a lot of big against Sabonis.
True.
They also play the Thunder twice or three times. They play the Thunder two more times. Yeah. Gafford was great against the Thunder. And they play the Nuggets, and you figure Gafford will play in that game too. So some of the matchups are going to dictate it.
I'm glad the Thunder did not go after Gafford at the trade deadline. And we got him.
Another thing too is I feel like if Lively gets in foul trouble, Gafford is the guy, and Lively has gotten foul trouble a couple games too. So, you know, got to keep that under control and not, you know, not force the coach's hand that way.
Next one, what's your favorite Mavs quote since the All-Star break? It could be from a player or Jason Kidd. Mine's really simple. I'll get it out of the way. It goes with the whole defensive talk that we all have been talking about. And it's P.J. Washington after the game the other night. He says, regarding defense, I think it's will and want to on that end.
Mm.
And we can talk about schemes and matchups and, you know, zones and strategies and all this stuff when it comes to defense. But ultimately, it boils down to how much do you want it and how much are you going to give? How much effort are you going to give on the defensive end? And it sounds simple, sounds cliche, but just to hear an NBA player, hear PJ say, hey, it just comes down to how much, like, basically how much you want it, will and want on the defensive end. I think that's telling. And there's different times that we've watched them over the stretch where, like, yeah, you're not giving your full effort on the defensive end. And they got to figure that out. Because come playoff time, you got to give everything.
The one guy that does consistently give pretty much everything on defense, PJ Washington.
Yeah.
He plays hard. And so for him to say that, his words carry a little more weight than if other players might have said it, or if a coach says it or whatever.
Yeah.
Or if you and I say it. Because I'll sit here and say, hey, you got to want it. I did at the top of the show. It's like it's effort.
Yeah.
My words don't mean anything.
You're wearing a Dennis Rodman shirt.
You know who tried hard?
Dennis Rodman.
Dennis Rodman did.
Yes, he did.
All right. So
number 70.
That's right. Always and only number 70.
Only number 70.
My favorite quote for funny reasons, J Kidd is like, hey, Rome wasn't built in a day. I think that's a really funny quote to use, like, in any context in life. Because it's just like, hey, back off. Like,
yeah,
you know, hey, are you going to get your life together or not? Rome wasn't built in a day, man. just relax. You know, just calm down. I think it's great. I think it's a great quote.
Or what, 60-something games into the season?
Yeah, of course, in this specific context, like, you're running out of days to build Rome.
This is his third year.
And Rome also... was a very grand place. It took many years to expand the empire.
Who built Rome?
Remus and Romulus, right? I don't know. It's some wolves.
Pretty smart.
I don't know. I think we all know who really built Rome. people that were conscripted and forced to build Rome.
Ooh.
Yeah. Cat's chirping in from the peanut gallery. People want you on the show, Kat.
I know.
This was a perfect opportunity to join the show. Yeah, I mean,
this is Kat's spot, right?
You know, obviously that quote is trying to urge, you know, some patience and stuff. Obviously, you're running out of time. However, there is quite a bit of padding between 10 and 11. So, like, realistically speaking, unless some real calamitous stuff happens, the Mavs will be in the play-in. Yeah. So you have some time to figure it out. But, like, I don't think the play-in is the goal. So, in which case, time is really running out because you're, what, 2 or 3 games out of sixth. So, like, you kind of have to build Rome in maybe 2 days. I just think it was a funny quote. It's a great quote for any point in your life.
Listen, Jason Kidd has had some incredible quotes.
Yes.
And honestly, if I was a head coach and I had to talk to media as much as they have to, I think I would do the same thing. Like, I would do bits. I would just mess with people, and I would just come up with the weirdest analogies to just make people be like, what does that mean?
Just play,
like,
games.
Yeah.
Rick did that a lot, too. You know, Rick had a lot of isms, you know?
Yes, he did.
The milk drinkers and what – put lipstick on a pig, and he'd call games pillow fights all the time. Like, you know, it's great. Like, just – you're supposed to have fun. This is entertainment.
Good old Rick.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
We'll do a little back and forth of worst case and best case scenario to end of the season. Let's do worst case first. What is the worst case scenario for the Mavs as they end the season?
Excluding injuries and meteors and all that stuff.
Wow.
They fall down to 10th, which is not unrealistic.
Yeah, because the worst case, they're not missing the play-in.
They're, like, what, like, 6 games up, I think, or 7. I mean, it's not impossible that they do miss it if you go, like, whatever, 5-15 or something.
There's,
but, like,
7 games up on the Jazz right now.
Okay. Realistically speaking, the worst case scenario is they finish 10th. Yeah. Is there, what, only game and a half up or 2 games up right now or something?
Yeah.
Finishing 10th would be a big bummer because you have to go on the road. for the first playing game. And you have to win
probably that game against the Warriors or Lakers.
Yeah. And then you have to go on the road in the next game against the loser of the 7-8, which would probably be the Lakers or the Warriors. And imagine the mystical forces at play having to win a do or die, win or go home game, road game against the Lakers.
Yeah. Imagine you have to win do or die road games against, you know, you have to go from like Golden State, LA, and then if you get past those, for the chance to play in Denver.
Mm.
Like that's a possibility, right?
Yeah.
That's like worst case scenario.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. That would be pretty bad. And, you know, even if you do win those games, of course, like you said, you run into a buzzsaw one way or the other, and you're going to be a little tired. You're going to have taken like, you're going to play two games in 3 days, and it's a lot of travel, and I'm not really a fan of that.
All right, best case scenario.
Well, what's your worst case? Is it that?
No, it's that. Okay. Finishing 10th and have to play the Warriors or Lakers. Like, it's misery.
Yeah.
I already hate the play-in. Like, come on. What are we? All right, best case scenario for the Mavs to finish the season.
Best case scenario is they climb up to 5th or 6th.
Yeah.
Which
and avoid Denver.
They're just as close, I think, to 5th as they are to 10th right now. They're like 2.5, 3 games, something like that.
Or 2.5.
Okay.
A game and a half for a 10th.
Okay. Ooh, we got lovely standings here. So the Mavs are 1.5.
Like, I made these standings. Reference them.
At your behest. So they're 2.5 games behind 5th and a game and a half up on 10th. So best case scenario is, they climb out of the play-in and into the top 6 and are able to somehow get a matchup that is more favorable. Now, I think you and I are in agreement that Denver and the Clippers are a little scary and annoying, and Minnesota and OKC might not have as much experience. Plus, we don't know with Kat suffering the meniscus. Like, who knows what that situation will look like? So, like, there may be reasons to believe that playing a team, even if they have a better record, they have less playoff experience.
I was going to say, it's nothing against Minnesota and OKC because they're great teams.
Dude, in 7 games of having to worry about Jaden McDaniels, no thanks.
What about Ant's block?
Oh, powerful, mighty.
That was incredible. I've watched that single play so many times.
And the fact that he got up quicker than Nesmith did from that.
Just, yes.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow.
And where his head was, like, the rim stopped him from going up further.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude,
he would have jumped like 14 feet in the air, dude.
I think you really could like put something on top of the backboard.
Yeah.
It's just about the experience part. It's like when I say, like, hey, I want to avoid Denver. And honestly, it's just kind of like the past, too. Like, a series against the Clippers in the first round again. It's like, how many times we got to do this? So it's like, can we just get a different opponent in a series?
Beggars can't be choosers, but is your best case scenario manipulating the RNG so that you get into the play-in and win the play-in to avoid playing the Clippers in the – and the Nugget, like,
yeah, you're playing with fire.
So is your best case scenario who you aren't playing in the first round, or is your best case scenario avoiding the play-in?
I don't know. This is breaking my brain now.
You made the question.
It just depends on we got to see how some of these things shake out. But yeah, best case scenario, you avoid the play-in. You don't want to mess with that. You get into a guaranteed playoff series and you finish, you know, 5th or 6th. You avoid Denver at the most there, which the top of the West, I mean, you can't predict anything at the top of the West. They're all a game out, 1-2-3, or a game difference.
Coming down to game 80, 81, 82 for sure.
What's your biggest argument for, hey, this is why the Mavericks are going to finish top 6?
My biggest argument, pretty simple. Mavs have the 5th easiest remaining strength of schedule in the league.
They're 2 games out from the 6th spot right now.
Yes. 5th easiest remaining strength of schedule. 5 of their 9 hardest games remaining by opponent win percentage come against the Kings and the Warriors. Mm. Now, 3 of those are road games. But given that your hardest games are against the teams that winning would help you the most with, like if you're able to win the easy games and able to win those head-to-heads, you have a really good chance of making the top 6, just objectively speaking. Meanwhile,
I mean, the Kings are in front of them right now, so by a game and a half.
Yeah, so if you're able to go 2-0, then all of a sudden, you know. And also their 82nd game, the Mavs' 82nd game of the season is at OKC, but that game might not matter for one or, frankly, both teams. So, like, you might not be facing OKC at full strength in game 82, which could make that game a little easier. Now, the Suns Clippers, who are probably too far ahead of the Mavs to matter, but you never know. Suns, Clippers, Lakers, Kings, and Pelicans, who are seeds 4 through 9 in the West right now, basically.
Yeah.
All have top 10 toughest remaining strengths of schedule.
Oh.
Now, some of those games are going to be against each other, so there will be a winner. But, like,
they're playing each other.
It's not, you know, it's not guaranteed that those teams are going to waltz to the finish line. So, given their strengths or their strength of schedule and the Mavs' relative lack of strength of schedule, if they're able to take care of business, like, it's, I could see it happening.
This is where the games against the lower record struggling teams, you drop a few of those.
Yeah, it's tough.
It's going to be
next two games.
High alert of
Pistons
fans.
Bulls. Yeah, I mean, Bulls are playing well. Pistons just won last night. You got to win them.
I think Chicago won last night too, right?
Yeah, they won 3 in a row. Yeah.
Balling out right now.
Yeah.
All right.
Why do you think they'll make the top 6?
Yeah, I think, you know, strength of schedule stuff, you know, that, you know how much that stat is hard for me across the board. But yeah, I mean, that's the biggest case for them. I think another thing is everybody, and it scares me even like saying this.
Don't say it. No, don't say it. Don't say it.
Everyone's playing
okay
right now. Is that close?
All right.
For the Mavs, so, you know, Luka, Kyrie are...
Don't stop talking.
I'm just saying, like, I mean, you want everybody out there playing and healthy. So, and they are. And I'm trying not to jinx it.
You know, some real weird stuff is going to happen tomorrow night.
Detroit.
Like, four guys are going to run into each other.
No. But, I mean, I think that's the biggest case for them, or biggest thing for them, is strength of schedule and the fact that they're all fully healthy right now. And
one potentially big thing that we that question is unanswered right now. You might know the answer by the time you listen to this pod or watch this pod. Steph rolled his ankle last night for the Warriors. Yeah. The Mavs play the Warriors next week.
Yeah.
Now, Steph, history of ankle injuries. Luckily, that hasn't been as big of a problem for him in the last, whatever, 10 years. But, like, if he's out 1 week versus 3 weeks, that drastically changes the situation for the Warriors.
Yeah. Last question. Speaking of Steph, he might be your answer for this one or one of them. Who's the best individual show right now in the NBA?
Okay, I'm going to go honorable mention, Victor Wembanyama.
Yeah.
But he plays for the Spurs.
How much he's improved has been fascinating. Because,
dude, he's amazing.
Like, at the beginning of the season, it was, I got to, like, see him play just because, like, I just want to see him, like, walk around out there. And now it's like, I got to see him play because he's doing some just insane stuff all the time.
He's unreal. And it is.
It's annoying. So we're going to have to play him so many times.
He is a terrifying basketball player, dude. He is so good. He's so good. But he plays for them villains down south, you know, 5 hours or whatever south on 35. And, you know, I'm a homer. I'm the propaganda king. So I'm going with Kyrie Irving. Dude, when Kyrie's got it going, man, he is so much fun to watch. I mean, he's a wizard with the ball. He can score from anywhere on the floor. He is doing all the stuff. You and I had a pod glowing about him for an hour after that Knicks game and the Pelicans game a couple months ago, whenever that was. Like, he can do things with the ball that nobody else in the world can. He comes up with so many, like, just veteran crafty plays on defense, too. Like, he is just so much fun to watch.
Like, if you're watching on YouTube, that play he just made on Duncan Robinson, like, I just don't, like, it's such a simple play in the moment that you're like, all right, cool, he just scored. I'm like, that's just not normal, but it's so fun to watch.
Yeah, and it's more than just, like, the, wow, he's such a wizard. Like, he's got incredible technique.
Yeah.
He's got incredible touch. His footwork is unreal. His ability to manipulate defenders, like, he is an amazing player. Of course, he hit one of the biggest shots, if not the biggest shot of the game last night, that three in the corner.
Yeah.
Right after inexplicably stepping out of bounds the previous trip.
Yeah.
You know, he redeemed himself. He is just amazing. And, man, I don't know. I know that's a real homer take, but, dude, when Kyrie's feeling it, like, he really is a one-of-one kind of player.
Yeah, Kyrie's in my top five of this. I have Wimby in that. For me, I still have Steph Curry.
Mm.
I can't quit him. Like, when Steph is moving off screens and hitting his shots, it is one of my favorite things to watch in sports, of just the threes. And I don't know if it's, you know, and this could play into Kyrie stuff too, or it does, of being a smaller player too, and seeing him pull off stuff like that. Jokic is up there for me. Just some of the stuff, just watching, just such a unique frame of a human being that is the best, you know, arguably the best basketball player in the world, do his thing. And it's like, there's nobody can really do anything with him every night. Is, I think about this question in the sense of, all right, who's playing tonight? If my kids are asleep and Barb is like, she's a big crafty person and she's like doing some craft, I'm like, all right, who's on the TV? Like, do I have to watch this or I'm going to watch a movie? If one of these guys are on, I'm watching. Like, it's just like, I think Ant is kind of climbing up the list, but he's not fully there for me yet. But yeah, Kyrie is, and Luka, obviously. But
Ant is a lot of fun to watch. Ant's a lot. Yeah, Luka, of course.
Did we forget anybody?
A lot of fun to watch, too. I'm sure we did forget somebody. But one thing on Steph, too, like that, the 2015-16 Warriors, when they won like 100 games in a row to start the season, is some of the most fun I've ever had watching basketball.
Yeah.
It was just
their ball movement.
Oh, my God. It was amazing. It was just amazing. You know, I mean, you knew that you were, of course, they were winning every game, so it was obvious, but like, you knew that what you were watching was different. Like, this is not how basketball, this is not like the basketball that I know, like in a good way.
Yeah.
You know, you're asking like out of affection, like, what happened to the game I love? Like, you're excited. You know, it's not the Mark Jackson meme. So, yeah, shout out to Steph. Still going, age 35. He is still just,
just insane,
dude. And like, not to be like a kids at home, but if you are like a basketball player and you want to learn about what it means to be a basketball player, watch Steph whenever he doesn't have the ball.
Yeah,
like how he prepares himself to shoot, how he uses screens, how he toys with his defender. It is like, holy moly, man. It is fun. It is fun.
And lastly, I have Jordan Poole. Guys, it's been a great week of the Corner Three. Do we have anything to plug?
I don't know. You doing that segment or not?
Yes. Yes, I am going to do the segment. Take That With You is this week.
Yeah. Okay. So next week we have a player podcast coming out. How about The Landlord is going to be in the
Rent
house.
Rent is due.
Yep. And Devin Harris gives him a check. That's part of their interview. Devin Harris just pays him $1,800.
Yeah.
So, that will be coming out on the Mavs YouTube channel next week in addition to all the usual pods. Again, Austin will be back with us next week, too. And we will not be doing a live stream next week because there's going to be a special interview taking place in the studio that you'll be able to see later. But we'll have some more streams coming up in the near future.
Yes, we will. Yeah. Catch you next Friday on the Corner 3.